chapter 14 now. There will be an examination for your pleasure on Wednesday, 5 o'clock. You'll have to know all of the 24 elements. Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunke Prakriti Janguna Janguna Karanam Guna Sangasya Sarasat Yoni Janmasu. So you see the word guna there. Jangunan and guna sanga. So that this describing details of how the modes of nature. So chapter 13 said the modes of nature bind the living entity to take different births. Sarasat Yoni Janmasu. But now the details are given how they bind, how they affect the soul in detail. So this is Krishna's given an outline and now he's filling it in with the details. Alright, let's chant verse 1. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Parambhuya Bravakshami Jnananam Ganamuttamam Yajjyadva Munaya Sarve Param Sinimito Gataha. The Supreme Personality of God had said, again, I shall declare to you this supreme wisdom, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have attained the supreme perfection. So Krishna continues speaking, giving details to Arjuna. He says, Parang Bhuva, Abhuya Bravakshami. So I will now explain again this knowledge. I will speak a different kind of knowledge, a kind of knowledge different from what I have spoken before. It deals specifically with the modes of nature. It is the best knowledge dealing with property and jiva. Yeah. Of all this, it is the best knowledge about property and jiva. And it resembles a distillation of yogurt from milk. In other words, the sages have churned the ocean of milk and they've gotten the curd of this knowledge of chapter 14. And realizing this knowledge and meditating on it thoughtfully, all great sages, Muniya, Sarve, they have attained the supreme perfection and true perception of the Supreme Lord. Jnananam Jnanamuttamam. So this is what it means, Jnananam Jnanamuttamam. And Prabhupada says in his commentary, this knowledge is far, far superior to all other processes of knowledge thus explained. And sometimes devotees say, well, wait a minute, what about chapter 9? That was called confidential knowledge. Is this higher than that? I thought that this was the highest point of the confidential knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, the middle six chapters. Now Krishna says his knowledge is better. Jnananam Jnanamuttamam. So, but Prabhupada explains that there's the knowledge superior to all other processes of knowledge that's explained. So, in Baladeva Dibhushan says this knowledge is the knowledge of jiva and prakriti. Of knowledge of jiva and prakriti, this is the best, but not of pure bhakti, ananya bhakti, man mana bhava man bhakto. That's the highest. This knowledge is not higher than that. So Arjuna is wondering, what is the benefit of this hearing this knowledge? And Krishna says, Param Siddho Siddhim Ito Gataha, that you'll attain the supreme perfection by this knowledge. And he's wondering, is there any proof of this? And then he says, Yajjyatva Munaya Sarve. All the sages, they have attained supreme destination after hearing this knowledge. So that's the proof. And Prabhupada comments, from the 7th chapter to the end of the 12th chapter, Sri Krishna in detail reveals the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Don't make the mess. Now the Lord Himself is further enlightening Arjuna. If one understands this chapter through the process of philosophical speculation, he will come to an understanding of devotional service. What? I thought we aren't supposed to speculate. So Prabhupada's telling us to philosophically speculate. What's going on? So as we explained, there's a difference between mental speculation and philosophical speculation. Yes? You know what the difference is. Actually, there's a letter which explains this thoroughly. And I'll just read it to you, because then you can hear exactly what Prabhupada wrote to a devotee, Chator Bhuj, in 1972. He said, "My dear Chator Bhuj, please accept my blessings. I am happy to receive your nice letter of January 10, 1972. And I am pleased to note you're asking very intelligent questions. That is natural position for a neophyte devotee who is sincerely seeking to understand what is the absolute truth." He says, as for different things, and then he comes to this point. As for the difference between mental speculation and philosophical speculation, we take it that everything is known by the psychological action of the mind, so that philosophical speculation is the same as mental speculation if it is merely the random or haphazard activity of the brain to understand everything and making theories, ifs and maybes. But if philosophical speculation is directed by Shastra and Guru, and if the goal of such philosophical attempts... No coughing, please. But if philosophical speculation is directed by Shastra and Guru, and if the goal of such philosophical attempts is to achieve Vishnu, then that philosophical speculation is not mental speculation. It is just like this. He explains it again in different words. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "I am the taste of water." Philosophical speculation in the accepted sense then means to try to understand, under the direction of Shastra and Guru, just how Krishna is the taste of water. The points of Bhagavad Gita, though they are simple and complete, can be understood from unlimited angles of vision. So, our philosophy is not dry, like mental speculation. The proper function of the brain or psychological activity is to understand everything through Krishna's perspective or point of view. And so, there is no limit to that understanding because Krishna is unlimited. So you can go ad infinitum, analyzing the philosophy from different points. And even though it can be said that the devotee who knows Krishna, he knows everything. You know that? Yo mam... Still, the philosophical process never stops, and the devotee continues to increase his knowledge, even though he knows everything. Right? Maybe you're wondering, we know Krishna, so now just chant and go into samadhi, or... No, you continue increasing more and more. Knowledge is always increasing. Try to understand this point is a very good question. Then the next point has nothing to do with this, but it's funny. I'll read to you because it's in the letter. Lord Chaitanya may have had long hair in his early grihastha life, but that does not mean that we should imitate Lord Chaitanya. Chaitanya also had shaven head and shikha. The important thing is that we follow the regular guidelines as laid down by great saints and acharyas in our line. And it's always recommended that we wear clean shaven heads. But there is no hard and fast rule in this respect. If it is practical to grow hairs out, that can be done. But it is not that we may imitate Lord Chaitanya by growing big hairs. It's funny, the way Prabhupada writes in it. So, now we understand what philosophical speculation is. So we're allowed to think. What that thinking should be, analyzing the scripture, the guru, and sadhus, and seeing it from different angles and analyzing it, and trying to go deeper into it, trying to understand what it means. So, In the 13th chapter, it was clearly explained that by humbly developing knowledge, one may possibly be freed from material entanglement. It has also been explained that it is due to association with the modes of nature that the jiva is entangled in this material world. Now, in this chapter, the Lord explains what those modes are, how they act, how they bind, and how they give liberation. How they give liberation. The modes of nature give liberation? How is that? Well, we'll hear about that as we go along. Yeah, the modes of nature also give liberation. That means, see, if you're in the mode of goodness, then you can, right? That's the whole idea, is to bring you to the mode of goodness, and from there, you advance. The knowledge explained in this chapter is proclaimed by the Lord to be superior to the knowledge given so far in other chapters. In other words, it's not that we just jump to the transcendental platform. No, first we have to develop the mode of goodness. You can't just jump into the, you know, Shuddha Sattva. You have to, if you're in ignorance, you have to generally go through some passionate stage and then you come to goodness. And if you're in passion, you gradually come to goodness. Like this. You can't jump from goodness into the transcendental mode, the Shuddha Sattva. So it means you have to know how the modes of nature work and how to direct yourself gradually to the mode of goodness. In order to do that, you have to know what are the symptoms of the modes in all activities. Eating, sleeping, talking, bathing, right, dealing with people, all things. The knowledge explained in this chapter is proclaimed by the Lord to be superior to the knowledge given so far in other chapters. By understanding this knowledge, various sages attain perfection and are transferred to the spiritual world. The Lord now explains the same knowledge in a better way. This knowledge is far, far superior to all other processes of knowledge thus far explained. And knowing this, many attain perfection. This is expected. Thus, it is expected that one who understands this 14th chapter will attain perfection. So it's better because it gives more details of how you can actually bring yourself to the mode of goodness above the lower modes, and then how that will bring liberation. Okay, text 2. Idam jnanam upashritya mama sadharmya agadaha sargopi nupajayante pralayena vyathantisha. By becoming fixed in this knowledge, one can attain to the transcendental nature like my own. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation or disturbed at the time of dissolution. Idam jnanam upashritya. So if you take shelter of this knowledge, mama sadharmyam agata, you attain my nature. So that means, Vishwanath Chakravarti says, this means sarupya mukti. You develop a form like Krishna's. Sargopi nubhajayante pralaye navyathantisha. So you're not born again, and you're not disturbed at the time of death. So, and Baladeva Vidyabhushan says that this knowledge comes by worshipping the feet of the Guru. There's no other way to attain this knowledge. And that was one of the items listed in chapter 13. Acharya Upasanam, worshipping the Guru. So, how does the birth of this creation take place? Because Krishna said, thus one is not born at the time of creation or disturbed at the time of dissolution. So then the question, Arjuna asks in the commentaries, how does the birth of this creation take place? Based upon this sargopi nubhajayante. And Krishna answers, mama yonir mahat brahma tasmin garbham dadhamyaham
sambhava sarva bhutanam tato bhavati bharata.
The total material substance called Brahman is the source of birth, and it is that Brahman that I impregnate, making possible the births of all living beings of some part. So this is how the creation, the birth of the creation takes place. Mama yonya mahad brahma tasmin garbham dadamyaham. So Krishna gives the garbham, right, the pregnancy, into the mahad brahma. Here mahad brahma is discussed because we generally know Brahma as spirit, but Brahma also means material nature. Brahma can mean Parabrahma, can mean Brahman, the Jiva, can mean Parabrahman, the Lord, can mean Brahma Jyoti, and it can mean Mahat Brahma, the material energy. So the word Brahma has many meanings, and it depends on the context in which it's being used. So he says, I impregnate the Brahma, Mahat Brahma, Mama Yonir, Mahat Brahma. Tasmin garbam dadham yaham. So then he's talking about material energy. Prabhupada says, this is an explanation of the world. Everything that takes place is due to the combination of kshetra and kshetragya, the body and soul. This combination of prakriti and jiva is made possible by the Lord Himself. The Mahatattva is the total cause of the total cosmic manifestation, and that total substance of the material cause, in which there are three modes, is sometimes called Brahman. Yeah. The Lord impregnates that total substance. And he quotes from the Upanishad. You can give that to Sitaram. The Supreme Person impregnates that Brahman with the seeds of the living entities. So the word garbham means the tatashta jivas, tatashta shakti, all of the jivas, conditioned jivas. They're injected by the glands of Maha Vishnu into Pradhan Maya, which is the Pradhan, which is the preliminary potential state of the Mahatattva. And Prabhupada gives the classic example, which is usually asked in examinations, in the second paragraph. Hint, hint. The scorpion lays its eggs in piles of rice, and sometimes it is said that the scorpion is born out of rice. But the rice is not the cause of the scorpion. Actually, the eggs were laid by the mother. Similarly, prakriti, material nature, is not the cause of the birth of the living entities. The seed is given by the Lord, and they only seem to come out as products of material nature. So Krishna describes how he is impregnating that and causing the birth of all beings into this world. And the next verse continues in this same theme. So then he calls himself the Big Daddy, the Father, the seed-giving Father of all species.
Sarvayonishu kaunteya murtaya sambhavanti yaha tasam brahma mahadyoni raham bija vradapita.
It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed giving father. So, sarvayonishu kaunteya. Just like Arjuna was born from his mother, so he's called Kunteya, his mother Kunti. He was also impregnated by Maharaj Pandu, or ultimately by Indradev. So Krishna is also Bija Pradapita, the seed-giving father. So the Bija here means all the jivas, again. And Savayonishu means all the different kinds of species. And it's mentioned in Bhagavatam and other places that there are four kinds of births that one may take. Svedaja, which is born from perspiration. Svedaja. And then Andaja, and born from eggs. And then Udbija, born from seeds. And Jarayuja, born from womb. I'll write them down. Commentaries, it's mentioned that all Sarvayonish, all the species, demigods, humans, and all creatures that fly in the sky, swim on the earth, or swim in the water and crawl on the land. Now, according to their karma, Krishna says, I bring them into their particular body. And they associate with a particular mode of nature. So therefore, I'm the Ahambija Pradapita. Okay. Next verse.
Sattvam rajastama iti guna prakriti sambhavaha nivadandi mahabaho dedenamyayam.
Material nature consists of three modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. When the eternal living entity comes in contact with nature, O mighty armed Arjuna, he becomes conditioned by these modes. So the prakriti is made up of these three energies. And they nibbananti, they bind the conditioned souls. Of course, Arjuna is Mahabaho, so he's very powerful. He's not conditioned by the modes of nature. They can't bind him. But these three modes of nature are compared to like three ropes which are tied together. And even one rope is strong enough to bind you, but what to speak of there's three of them twisted together. That is very, very powerful. So the modes of nature, guna means quality, but it also means rope. So then it binds you into this material world. And there's three of them for those who are conditioned. And now Krishna describes these three modes of nature, exactly how they bind the jiva. He gives details now, beginning with the mode of goodness. Text 6.
Tatra sattvam nimalatvat prakashakam manamayam sukha sangam nibadnanti jnana sangena chanaga.
O sinless one, the mode of goodness, being purer than the others, is illuminating and it frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. So, here's a nice description. The first word is nirmalatvat. So it means there's no dirt or mala. It's pure, purer than the others. And it is prakashakam, it is enlightening. It doesn't put one into ignorance or cover one from anything, but rather it gives one knowledge and enlightens one. And anamayam means without sinful reaction. It frees one from sinful reaction. And some say disease also. Because when one is in the mode of goodness, then it's easier for him to resist sinful temptations from the lower. Just take a lot longer than you expect, and usually things, you know, break or something like this. So even the mode of goodness has its problems. And what is that problem? Those two problems: sukha sangena and jnana sangena. That one becomes attached to happiness and one becomes attached to knowledge. And Prabhupada describes this in his commentary. He says, actually, these three kinds of people, he says, one is happy, one is very active, and the other one is helpless. My goodness, passion, and ignorance. And all these type of psychological manifestations are the causes of the entity's conditioned status. How they're differently conditioned is described here. The effect of goodness is that one becomes wiser than the other ones. And those in goodness, therefore, are not much affected by miseries. And he has a sense of advancement in knowledge. And the representative is the Brahman, who's in the mode of goodness. And the sense of happiness is understood that in the mode of goodness, one's more or less free from sinful reactions. Therefore, he's happier. This knowledge means that, because the word jnana here has a particular context, because jnana can mean understanding Krishna also, as it did in chapter 7, where the word jnana was used, and in chapter 9, Raja Vijaya Raja Guyam, and Maya Sakta Mana Partha Yogam Yunjan Manasraya Asangshayam Samagramam. Yes, yes, he touched him. So this knowledge means understanding material objects and their how to use them properly. Having good material discrimination. Understanding material objects in their proper sense. Prabhupada says the difficulty here in the mode of goodness is that when a living entity is situated in goodness, he becomes conditioned to feel that he's advanced in knowledge and is better than others. So that's not so good for Vaishnavas who are supposed to be humble. So mode of goodness is generally good for it's advantageous or favorable for spiritual life. But if one becomes a little bit proud, thinking he's better than others, then it becomes a disadvantage. So then he has to be aware of that and always remember what was his original condition and how it's by the mercy of his guru and Krishna that he has come to such nice platform. So Krishna says that he calls Arjuna Anaga, you're sinless, meaning that you don't have these two faults, Arjuna. You don't have jnana sangena and sukha sangena. You're anuga. You're free from these two sins. There's two sins in the mode of goodness, but you don't have these. So in the mode of goodness, there's happiness and peace. And one doesn't feel any disturbances. There's no vikaras in the heart. There's no transformations going on constantly in the heart. People in the mode of passion, they're always being surged by transformations of emotions pushing through the heart. Attachment, hatred, envy, this and that, pulling back and forth, aversion, attraction, hankering, lamenting. But in the mode of goodness, these transformations, they don't happen in the heart. A person is kind of equipoised and balanced, sattvic, pensive, cool-headed, like that. So, and then he feels happy because he's peaceful, then later he feels happy because of that, because he doesn't have all of these transformations. And because the covering of the soul is less, the conditioned soul is less afflicted by covering, so therefore his knowledge, the natural knowledge comes through more in his conditioning, it's not as heavy, so that knowledge is allowed to surface to a certain degree in the mode of goodness. The covering is less compared to the covering of passion or the covering of ignorance. So more knowledge comes through. But one becomes a jnana sangena or sukha sangena, then there's a big problem, because sangena means attachment. I mean, it's attached to knowledge or happiness, then he becomes attached to the means by which he can get those things. the work or activity by which he gets knowledge and happiness. And when he gets attached to that activity, then some passion rolls in, contaminates his goodness. So there's no one who's completely in goodness. The mode of goodness is always afflicted and mixed, contaminated by the lower modes, passion. So this is how passion affects or kind of sneaks into the mode of goodness, because the person becomes attached to his knowledge and his happiness, and then he becomes attached to the ways that he gets those, the mode, the means by which he gets them, and then he becomes attached to those activities, and then attachment means passion. So attachment to jnana creates ajnana. Attachment to knowledge creates ignorance. It's kind of ironic that it happens like this. Okay, text 7. Raja ragadmakam vidhi trishna songa samudbhavam tannibadnati kaunteya karma sangena jainam. The mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longings, O son of Kunti. And because of this, the embodied living entity is bound to material fruitive actions. So, Rajo Ragatmakam Vidhi. So, Rajaguna is Ragatmakam. It's like what you were studying in Nectar Devotion, right? Ragatmika, Bhakti. And Raganuga, right? So this is a kind of different ragatmakam. There's a kind of a greed, but it's not for rasa with Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan, but rather it's for the vishaya, the regular, different kind of object, a sense object, in the groves of the waves of the modes of nature. Yeah, instead of having your nokalila, you know, in Manasi Ganga with Krishna and the gopis, you're having some kind of other, you know, different kind of lila, rasa, a different rasa lila, dancing in the disco instead of dancing in the groves of Vrindavan. So there's raga, there's attachment, because we know the word raga means intense attachment and absorption in some object. So that can be spiritual, but it can be material, unfortunately, also. So here it's the material sense. So the Rajaguna is Ragatmika. You should understand intense absorption and attraction and attachment to this object. That's Rajaguna. And it comes in two forms. Trishna Sangha Samudbhava. And it's born in these two things. Trishna means hankering for what you don't have. And Sangha means attached to what you already have. So the two sides of the coin, two different forms of raga. And previous acharyas, they also described that Trishna means hankering for the sense objects, and Sangha means Sangha with the family members and the relatives and friends, and you get attached to them. So there's another way to look at it. Trishna means the sense objects, and Sangha means relatives, friends, children. Tannimananti. So these bind one. Karma Sangena Dehinam. And Karma Sangena, here, like before you had Jnana Sangena, now you have Karma Sangena. So here, Karma Sangena, the person becomes attached to the work. This is the different kinds of attachments. So there's attachment to the fruits and attachments to the work itself. So this person becomes attached to the work itself. He's trying to keep up with the Joneses, the status quo. And he buys a new television set because he saw his neighbor got one. And then he puts the box out on the front lawn so everyone can see that he's got a new Motorola color TV, 24-inch screen, something like that. So the person is constantly working hard to Because he's got all these desires and he has to work hard to fulfill them. Prabhupada describes. And then generally it's characterized by the man and woman, the relationship of the man and the woman. Because there you have very intense attachment. And the acharyas say that raga, ragatmika means color, whereas nirmala means no color, like, right, colorless. Raga means also color, like someone who has colored glasses, like red colored glasses, so he sees everything red. Right? So someone who is ragatmakam, who is passionate, lusty, then he sees beautiful, lusty women everywhere. Or vice versa. Lusty woman sees lusty men everywhere. So his vision is like that. So Prabhupada describes the woman has attraction for man, and man has attraction for woman. This is passion. And when the mode of passion is increased, one develops hankering for material enjoyment. He wants to enjoy sense gratification. For sense gratification, a man in passion wants some honor in society or in the nation, and he wants to have a happy family with nice children, wife, and house without Krishna in the center, right? Just him in the center. These are the products of the mode of passion. As long as one is hankering after these things, he has to work very hard. Therefore, it is clearly stated here that he becomes associated with the fruits of his activities and thus becomes bound by such activities. In order to please his wife, children, and society, and to keep up his prestige, one has to work. Therefore, the whole material world is more or less in the mode of passion. But modern civilization is considered to be advanced in the standard of the mode of passion. Formerly, the advanced condition was considered to be in the mode of goodness, but not any longer. Yeah, maybe 100, 200, 300 years ago, people who are educated, brahminical, high class, cultured, gentle, soft-spoken, mild, this was considered high class. Nowadays you have like Rambo and rock stars, and Madonna, and these people are considered high class now. So you can see that the standards have been lowered a bit. So we've all experienced the mode of passion. It's later more of this will be discussed. What it creates. This is just a basic description, and then there will be more, describing what are the results, other manifestations, like this, and we'll get into some more description. We'll just give the definitions, and then we can discuss. Text 8. The mode of ignorance is now given by Krishna. Tamastvagyanajam vidhi mohanam sarvadenam pramadalasya nidrabhis tadnimanandi bharatam. Know that the mode of darkness, born of ignorance, is the delusion of all embodied living entities. The results of this mode are madness, indolence, and sleep, which bind the conditioned soul. So, tamas. Tamas means that it creates ignorance to the soul, covers the knowledge of the soul. So it means born of agyanajam, born of ignorance. Because it covers knowledge, therefore it's born of ignorance. And Krishna uses the word two here. And this comes, Prabhupada discusses, it comes from Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary. He says that the use of the word two indicates that ignorance is the opposite of the other two modes. Directly the opposite. And he says that the word, there's three descriptions here. Pramad, alasya, and nidra. So ignorance causes pramad, which means insanity, and alasya, which means laziness, and nidra, means sleeping. These three things. So, pramad, illusion or madness, is the opposite of goodness. And alasya, laziness, is the opposite of passion. Because when you're lazy, you don't do very much. But people in passion, they work very hard. They're always active. So it's the opposite of passion. And nidra is the opposite of both of them. So in this way, the mode of ignorance is completely the opposite, contradictory to the other two modes. And Prabhupada says the same thing. He says, in this verse, the specific application of the word two is very significant. This means that the mode of ignorance is a very peculiar qualification of the embodied soul. The mode of ignorance is just the opposite of the mode of goodness. In goodness, by development of knowledge, one can understand what is what. But in ignorance, it is just the opposite. Everyone under the spell of ignorance becomes mad, and a madman cannot understand what is what. Instead of making advancement, he becomes degraded. For example, everyone can see that his grandfather has died, his father has died, everyone. Man is mortal. The children that he conceives will also die, so death is sure. Still, people are madly accumulating money and working hard, very hard, all day and night, not caring for the eternal spirit. This is madness. In their madness, they are very reluctant to make advancement in spiritual understanding. Such people are very lazy, and when they are invited to associate for spiritual understanding, they are not much interested. They are not even active, like the man who is controlled by the mode of passion. Thus, another symptom of one embedded in ignorance is that he sleeps more than is required. 6 hours of sleep is sufficient, but a man in ignorance sleeps at least 10 or 12 hours a day. Such a man appears to be always dejected and is addicted to intoxicants and sleeping. These are the symptoms of the tamagun wala. Prabhupada's commentary is enlightening and also rather kind of comical or entertaining, maybe you can say. So people in ignorance are addicted to intoxicants and sleeping. We see, like in the western cities, there's a lot of drunks that live in the streets and they sleep a lot and they are always drunk. And they're mad. They talk to themselves. Probably inhabited by various ghosts. And they talk wildly. And talk to, when no one's there, they're talking to somebody, right? So, this is madness. This is the effect of the mode of ignorance. And they love it dark. They like it when it's dark. Like Rakshasas, they get enthusiastic and powerful when the sun goes down. So you see these people in ignorance, they come out at 9 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night, and then they feel very enlivened after the sun goes down. They start drinking and smoking this and that and taking drugs, and they go to clubs where everything's very dark, the lights are very low. They like it dark, and they drink more, and they, whatever, hallucinate and do so many things. And then around 5 o'clock, when the sun starts coming up again, then they open the doors of the discos and the clubs, and they come out onto the street, and they see the sun, and it's kind of like a vampire coming. They crawl back into their coffin. like the owl sleeps in the day and he's up at night. Keeps his eyes closed during the daytime sleeping. Or bats. Bats do this also. You see lots of bats around here. You don't see them in the day because they're... If you go towards the Goshala, there's a tree there, a huge tree with thousands of bats there, and they're hanging upside down. They're sleeping all day. It's a disgusting animal, It passes stool through its mouth. It's hanging upside down, and pretty, can't get more ignorant than that, right? Got it the wrong end, it should come out the other side. And then at night, you know, when it gets dark, you hear them, beep, 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 they make little noises, they wake up, and then they all start flying. You would think they're, the Westerner would think it's just a bird, but actually look closer, it's a bat. And it's another creature of the night. So the creatures of the night are in the human species also. When they're afflicted by the mode of ignorance, they like the night, and they like to get intoxicants. And then they sleep all day, and then they wake up in the afternoon sometime and have breakfast. Probably some of you remember this lifestyle. And then, you know, and then around 8, 9, 10 o'clock, and you start feeling enthusiastic again. That's like their peak hours, like 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, huh?